Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Admiral Phillips, and coming back from the Mirror Universe through some kind of a quantum transporter malfunction is Captain Dodd.
That's right, guys. I am back. I've survived the Terran Empire, and I gotta say, I'm glad to be back in the Prime Universe once again. You'll hear me a lot more on this show, because damn, there's a lot of Trek to be talked about now. Finally.
I know. Well, you've missed a lot of stuff over the last year. You've missed a lot of the stuff through Star Trek Online campaigns and storylines. You've missed a lot in various other games and Star Trek Discovery. I mean, there's just been a lot going on this year.
Yeah, it's finally Trek is alive again. I mean, we had the 50th anniversary like last year, I think it was. And now we've got stuff to talk about. We've got like a new TV show. We got video games now. Like I said, Star Trek Online, Star Trek Bridge Commander. There's Star Trek role-playing games now. New ones put out by Modiphius Entertainment, which is a British tabletop company, and they've been working with us over on TerribleWarriors.com. We've actually been playing through their living campaign, which is like their version of a monthly adventure. They'll give you a new scenario and you play it out. And our guys over at Terrible Warriors have been playing that for the last couple of months. And it's been really cool to actually get back into Star Trek again. But before I get any further into this, we also have to introduce, I guess he's not a cadet, he's not an ensign, because he knows a lot more about Trek than me. So I guess if you want to assign him a field rank commander, or admiral, sorry, I guess that'd be up to you.
Okay, it would be Commander Alex.
Yo.
Yeah, so we
That's
have our happy
crew. Commander Alex.
Yes. So, I believe when we were talking off air, you mentioned something about a game that you were very interested in.
Yes. As I was just talking about there, Star Trek now has a new role-playing game under the name Star Trek Adventures, which is put together by Modiphius Entertainment, which is run by a guy named Chris Birch. And it's this incredibly cool role-playing game that you can play with your friends. They also have tabletop miniatures. They had this incredibly cool collector's edition. It was shaped like a Borg cube, but it had a special role-playing handbook, which was exclusive to the Borg cube set. Actually, Alex got one of these. I gave that to him for Christmas. It's a very expensive book. It's like $100, but the system, it's complicated to learn, but once you get a hold of it, it's really cool. It uses two D20 and a couple of D6s. And basically, if you've played D&D or Pathfinder or Rifts, you'll pick it up pretty quickly. And like I said, they're doing this thing called the Living Campaign, which is like a new adventure scenario every month. They just put out character sheets for the Next Generation and the original series era. So that you've got the Enterprise, the original Enterprise, I think. You also got the Enterprise D. The default setting for the game, I think, is 2370. So just before Generations happens, the Enterprise was on the way to the Amargosa Laboratory, I think it was. Voyager was just launching pretty soon. The Dominion War was just starting to heat up. So it's a pretty open scenario for play. It doesn't tie you to the events of any one series. It gives you the entirety of TNG, the entirety of Voyager and DS9 to play through, but also gives you the Dominion War if you want to fight Jem'Hadar troops. It also gives you the option to play through the Klingon Civil War if you want to do that. And it's friggin' cool. I mean, me, Alex, and Lee, and Tristan from This Week in Geek and also Terrible Warriors, we're actually going to start our own one-off podcast, or not podcast, our own game, which we may broadcast over our Discord channel for fun. We haven't decided on a name for our ship, but the prospect for my game, so check it out, folks, is my game. If you remember the seventh season episode of TNG, the episode was called Parallels. You saw Riker appear on this damaged Enterprise D, and he's like, don't send us back to our universe. The Borg are everywhere. We won't go back. My game is set in that universe.
Oh, nice. That's the episode that Worf goes all over the multiverse.
Exactly. It's one of my all-time favorite episodes of like TNG. And I'm calling it Star Trek: The Desperation War. And basically, Starfleet had met the Borg. The Battle of Wolf 359 happened. Picard still is Locutus. Earth was assimilated. And the Federation has kept being pushed back, like loss after loss after loss. And like, there's very few Federation ships left. There's a loose alliance of the Alpha Quadrant species that are left. And literally humanity faces assimilation or extinction. And that's where I'm setting my game. And I'm looking forward to see what Alex comes up with, because Alex is he's a very interesting role player. His Dungeons and Dragons character carries a piece of bone from a bear from a very unique place as a weapon. He's a gnome, so he hits you with a bear's wang, for lack of a better description.
Called a baculum.
It is. So Alex is a fun guy to like kind of role play with. One of our other guys that we play with, Lee, Princess Giggletron from Twig. We haven't given him a proper name yet, but he's Princess Giggles until we say otherwise. He's a huge Star Trek nerd. Like, his apartment is like walking into the Voyager Ready room. It's ridiculous.
Upset with my suggestion. I suggested that we all be on a like laundry ship that does the laundry for all of it. All the rest of the fleet.
So that's what the crewmen do.
I don't want to be a laundry. I don't want to be in the sanitation division.
Does this ship have a garbage chute?
Well, think about it. That's something we've never seen, right? I mean, everybody has to have their stuff cleaned.
I thought that was what the replicator's for. You just,
That's so wasteful.
Incinerate and replicate.
But yeah, I mean,
that would mean that your food was made out of like incinerated underwear.
One of the other cool things about this game is because Star Trek has such a huge fan community. If you look on places like Reddit, people have developed all the ships that have ever been on the show. Like, I have a spreadsheet, which I still don't know how to goddamn print. If someone can figure that out for me, I've got everything from the Akira class to the Defiant to everything in between. Even the ships you see for like a second, like Challenger class or the Prometheus class or the Steam Runner, stuff like that. And it's ridiculous how much effort people have put into this. And every ship from like, I don't know, the Andorians, the Breen, the Nausicaan, stuff like that. There's everything is there. And this is all fan-made content that seems to be not overpowered for the game, but makes sense. And as Modiphius moves forward with its licensing of Star Trek Adventures, they plan to put out books for the Command Division, Science Division, Security, or Operations, I guess it would be, or whatever. They're also going to do books for the Beta Quadrant, Delta Quadrant, Gamma Quadrant. So we're going to see the Star Trek universe really open up. And I put the suggestion out to them on Twitter that they should do something for Star Trek Discovery. Because I would love to see stats on the Spore Drive. I'd love to see stats on Michael Burnham.
But if they did it for Discovery, wouldn't they just be rewriting the entire game?
Not really, because
there's a little joke in there, a little jab at, rewriting everything in history.
True, but we still don't know where Discovery fits into the true timeline, because, well, I guess that's a part of the major discussion of this episode is, how does this all work? Because it's a complicated issue. I myself have just blitzed through Star Trek Discovery inside of a week. all 14 episodes in pretty much 7 days. And I had some opinions early on. Now I've got a much different opinion from when I initially started last Sunday. I guess, Steve, where do we want to, take it into the main discussion point, or do we want to talk about Starfleet itself? Because that's another organization that we've kind of talked about before in the past, and how it seems like there's more life in the fandom finally again.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more in the fandom, and I think that with the new show coming out, with, you know, the recent film that came out like a year ago, we've kind of seen this resurgence of people interested in Star Trek in its various capacities, and especially we're in that era where everything is being rebooted. It, from, you know, animation to TV shows, it's nothing is pretty much original at this point. It's some of it's good renovations, some of it not so much. A lot of it is Attack of the Head Cannon, and so, like, you know, you have people just flocking to the various social media, to the podcast, to various clubs or associations, and I think that it's only going to strengthen these franchises, whether people love them or hate them. It's still, you know, it's still PR. People still will flock to the information.
Yeah, and the fact that we're all so connected via Twitter and Facebook and even Instagram, I think Starfleet has such an opportunity to grab onto it right now. I mean, you and me and Alex are part of Region 13, which is, I think, North America.
Well, it's not North America. It's actually Michigan and parts of Ontario, Canada.
Okay. I wasn't super clear on that.
It's southwestern Ontario, like from, I guess, Windsor to basically where we are.
Okay.
So that bottom left hoop where KW, Cambridge, Guelph, basically everywhere that's populated here.
Yeah.
And then I believe Toronto's in its own.
Yeah, I think it's on its own. But yeah, it's
large enough to do that.
In you know, within the last month, I think you'd mentioned on Twitter that you were going to join Starfleet, and like the very next day I joined. Just because, one, I didn't realize it was so freaking cheap. Two, I just wanted to see what it was about. And so I was like, for that, I can, you know, I'll join and see what happens. And then I ended up taking, I think I've been graded on, 45 classes or something now? It's ridiculous. I've got another, like, 12 I still got to do. But, like, I've gone in full force. Like, I've taken stuff on the Mirror Universe because Discovery was talking about it, and I really wasn't all that... I'd never watched the DS9 Mirror episodes. I'd never watched Enterprises. Like, my only exposure was the original series. I went back and watched, like, the Tholian Web so I could get the whole Defiant backstory along with the Mirror Darkly from Enterprise so that I could kind of have that full circle story of... all of that, and then because I wanted to try and connect all the canon, and so a lot of ways the Starfleet Academy that's in Starfleet is actually very helpful for getting up to historical spec. Like, I took things on time travel, parallel universes, mirror universe, you know, temporal mechanics, you know, temporal theory, a lot of stuff like that, because again, Discovery played with a lot of those aspects, and so it was kind of a me studying up to not sound ignorant when I talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the classes I took through Starfleet, I've done about 15 or 20 so far. I focused on the College of Borg Technology because I'm a Borg whore. What more can I say? I honestly just love it. So I did those. Borgasm. And so I did all those in the span of about 2 weeks, some while I was in the hospital and some while I was at home. Then I started focusing on the hardcore science stuff. I'm actually taking the astronomy classes right now, and the exams force you to know real science. Like they're talking about orbital decay. How many moons does Mars have? How many active satellites are above a certain planet? Stuff like that. What are some of the unique features to Venus? And I find I'm learning to appreciate the scope of the science a lot more. And that's something I really value, is that there's someone behind it who values it just as much as I do. Because Star Trek has always fostered my interest in science, especially astronomy. And I might go back and take some of the more fictional courses, kind of like how you have, Steve, taking stuff on the mirror universe and time travel.
Well, and see, I've even taken stuff on like the Q Continuum, the Alpha Quadrant, I've taken stuff on Starfleet Academy and like stuff specific to Starfleet, but I've taken, you know, Captain Kirk, I've taken History of the Enterprise 01 through 01A, the, you know, History of the United Federation of Planets, Articles of the Federation, schematics of the Enterprise A, and then I've taken like the characters' quotes and tech and trivia from like Star Trek 6 and 7. So, I mean, just stuff for fun, too.
I'll probably end up focusing more on Voyager, and when the inevitable Discovery course comes out, I could probably do pretty well at that, obviously, because it's so fresh in my mind. The original series is where I'll be weakest, because that's the series that I've gone on record on this show saying I don't like, but I'd have to give it another shot, because if I'm going to be a captain on this show, I guess I better know what the hell I'm talking about, so... I guess I'm going to have to go back and rewatch some of that.
The original series, you just need certain key episodes. You could get by with probably 10 to 15 episodes.
Well, and that's a given for any of the Trek series. Like for the most part, up until you get to like DS9 season like 5, pretty much any of them, they have about, you know, 6 or 7 episodes that are just throwaway.
Yeah, because I noticed Voyager has a lot of throwaway episodes.
Voyager's,
I mean,
notorious for it.
Yeah, like it has some good character development or character moments, but in terms of a serialized story, not really.
Well,
that's one thing I loved about Discovery. It was serialized storytelling episode to episode.
Well, and so is DS9 towards the end.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something modern television has given us, is the serialized episode, as is the serialized TV format. In sci-fi, it's been missing for quite some time. Like, and I know that's a loaded statement, but Alex and I constantly talk about Discovery, and we constantly compare it to Battlestar Galactica. And that was the last super hardcore sci-fi series I followed. I know there's The Expanse on TV, which one of our Twig members, Ryan, loves. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I'm sorry.
I do know that they more so based Discovery on the methodology of Game of Thrones.
Which I think is a really smart idea.
Because everyone was expendable.
Well, I love that. I mean, just the fact that they're... now, wait a second. We can talk about spoilers and shit, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. This is everybody's heard thoughts week to week. This is a total...
Let's be real. Anybody that wanted to watch the show has now found a way to watch the show.
Or blitzed through it already.
Okay, yeah. So one of the deaths that surprised me the most was when the security chief more or less got chopped in half by the tardigrade. And when Dr. Culber got his neck snapped, I was like, holy shit!
See, I wasn't that surprised because, like, the chick for, you know, security chief, she just kind of struck me as somebody that wasn't going to last because she was, like, a hothead, kind of, like, you know, just gung-ho, let's get into this, you know, that kind of thing. I was like, she's going to get ripped apart by that thing. And then the doctor, I figured he was going to get killed. I didn't think it was going to be in that method, but I think he was going to get killed anyway because he was the most intelligent person on the entire ship. And yet he got the least amount of, like, character building and at the same time the most character building when he was on screen. So just because they explained so much more about him than they did some of the other people.
I mean, one of the things I really liked about Discovery is a lot of the character progressions felt natural to me. I loved the romance between Burnham and Tyler. how it was tragic. I really liked that. And especially the gay romance between Stamets and Culber. It was really sweet without punching you in the face. Like, hey, we're gay. Like, no, it was, we're a couple in love and our duty is difficult and we'll have these cute moments, but we have a duty to do. And when he met him in the mycerial forest saying goodbye, that's the closest I've ever had a Star Trek episode affect me on an emotional level.
And yeah, I would kind of agree with you because, like, I may not be one who's for, like, I'm not any of the, I'm not one that really cares for all the romance stuff in the episodes themselves or, like, the relationships in that regard. But even with between Burnham and Tyler, I didn't care. I think I was more invested in Stamets and Culver than I was with Tyler and Burnham. Like, I think I cared more, and I think it was because they weren't, you know, trying to, like, overtly, like, shove this into the story. It just kind of happened naturally.
The thing I liked about most about Burnham and Tyler, it was a line in the last episode. He's saying goodbye to her on Quonos, and she looks at him and says, "I look at you now, and I see Ash Tyler looking at me, rather than Voke," or something along those lines. And she says, "I'm really bad at goodbyes because I have to do so many of them." And I hope, obviously, this character is going to come back in some capacity next season.
I think they'll be back next season.
Which is really cool. Like I said, a lot of the relationships in this show really, 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 really got me. And a lot of the characters. There were some characters I wish had gotten a little bit more development. My favorite character over the course of the season was Tilly. I have such a crush on Cadet Tilly. Well, I guess she's Ensign now.
Yeah, Ensign now.
But I loved her enthusiasm, how bubbly she was. I just loved, it's that over-enthusiastic, happy Trek. And I loved it when she says, "You know what? This is fucking cool." And Stan was like, "Yeah, this is fucking cool, isn't it?" I got excited for that. I mean, she seemed like the character that we were supposed to see the show through, that enthusiastic, yay, I'm in the future. Yay, I'm doing something neat. I'm a part of something bigger than what I am. And it was just fun. I haven't had a fun character like that since maybe Robert Picardo in the later seasons of Voyager, where he was a little bit more explorative with his human nature in teaching Seven all the social lessons.
Stuff he had to learn for granted.
Yeah, it's stuff that we took for granted because, you know, we're people and we expect this, but the writers were, you know, explain being nice to a Borg drone. I liked that. And with Tilly, I kind of got, she's bubbly and experiencing all these things and kind of stumbling over her words in this over-the-top world she's a part of, but she's still a professional at the end of the day. And when the time travel episode popped up with her and Mud, and her, she's like, "I have a thing for musicians." I had such a laugh at that. And her trying to get Burnham to go talk to Tyler. I don't know. Just there is a lot about the portrayal I really like. There's a lot about the character I like in general.
Yeah, I didn't mind the character so much. I did find that at times it was a little annoying, but I at least saw more personality and character instead of... I noticed on a lot of characters between episodes, there was a lot of back and forth of their personality quirks.
Yeah, you know, that's something I think Discovery nailed that maybe other series maybe didn't so much. I felt like there was less archetyping here, more characters. Like, it seemed like they only focused on a couple, whereas you look at the huge ensembles of the other casts. I think you got a little bit more here in some respects than previous seasons, just because it seemed a lot more laser focused. You can only focus on so many characters because you had Saru, you had Stamets,
Burnham,
you had Burnham, Tilly,
Lorca, Tyler.
Tyler. And that, and when you compare that to, say, Voyager, for example, which is my crew. So you got Tom Paris, B'Elanna, Tuvok, Janeway, Chakotay, Seven, the Doctor,
Neelix.
That's fucking nine characters. By shrinking it down, by compacting the cast, I think you got a lot better storytelling in some regards. Like, especially, like one of the best performances I've seen on a Star Trek episode, even Blair liked it. Blair hates Star Trek, was the portrayal of Harry Mudd.
See, I wasn't sure on him to begin with. However, when we first were introduced to him, I wasn't really sold on him. However, when he showed up and it was the time loop episode,
that was awesome.
I freaking loved that episode. To me, that was like the most Star Trek episode we got all season.
I think that's probably in my top five episodes.
Best episode of the season, for sure.
Oh, without a doubt.
That was my number one favorite of that episode, or season. I watched that over and over because it was so humorous and funny, and just the lines coming off of him and all the different things, and like between him and Stamets, essentially knowing what's going to happen at every time loop. It was just really interesting to see how they were going to play this Groundhog Day thing for the last, you know, hour of their existence, you know. So it was really fun to watch.
It's not the best portrayal of that I've seen before.
Be
in Stargate, but it was still right up there.
Well, I mean, every Star Trek season's had an episode like that. Like every series has had one. I just watched one on Voyager just the other night, and I know TNG's got quite a few of them.
But so yeah, I can think of
the original series. I can't remember the name of the episode, but the original series had the one where they were perpetually on a ship going to war with was it the Klingons or somebody, and no matter how many times they died, they were revived back and had to repeat the loop over and over again. So that does date back to the 60s even.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just a fun episode overall that I didn't mind watching. Now, there were episodes, too, where I was like, let's just move on. Like,
the episode I didn't much care for was the first part of the beginning of the Battle of Pavos, where they had that giant crystal transmitter.
Yep.
I didn't like the first half of that. I'm thinking, Jesus, can we get this over with?
I know. I was so done with that episode. I was waiting for them to do. Now, when they did the thing with the jumps and the being on the Klingon Ship of the Dead, I was all game. I was like, okay, this rocks. Like, it was great. But yeah, other than that, it was kind of like, eh.
One of the things that really surprised me is they took the Mirror Universe and made it really friggin' cool to me. Like, that, like, this is my first experience with it. And if Mirror Universe is this intense across the other series, which I really, really, really doubt, this is awesome. And I knew some of it because I know in Enterprise they do a couple of Mirror episodes. Well, and I know there's Emperor Hoshi or something.
Yeah, well, that's at the end of the two-parter. And those two episodes, the Mirror Darkly Part 1 and 2, it starts off with Archer as commander of the Enterprise, and the Admiral is the captain on the ship. And it's basically a mutiny setup, and they're trying to take over the ship. And because Archer has learned of the Defiant that the Tholians had, which was pulled from the Tholian Web episode of TOS and gone back in time 100 years. So it's the same starship, like the same uniforms, like everything, except the episode is centered in the Mirror Universe. There's no crossover from the Prime timeline. So it was quite interesting. Plus, they had Phlox create the Agonizer booth in the episode, which was kind of interesting, too. But they eventually take command of the Defiant, and Hoshi kills Archer after he's been on command on there, and takes it over and basically puts a stranglehold on the that Starfleet and says, you know, I'm taking over as Empress, you know. And so then, boom, that was it. And then jump 100 years, you've got, you know, Emperor Georgiou and a totally different, you know, flagship, which was just insanely powerful.
Yeah, I think it was the ISS Charon or something.
Charon, yep.
Charon or Charon or whatever, yeah. What the? Oh, kitty. Yeah. but yeah, I mean, overall, I had such a good time with this series. And I think the reason why is, as I was mentioning with like Alex, and I want to get his thoughts after this. This show felt like Star Trek with a this show felt like if Mass Effect and Battlestar Galactica had a Star Trek skin over it. I'm okay with this. This is a Star Trek. You can definitely tell was made in 2016, 17, 18, whatever. Now, written with modern ideology, modern writing techniques, and modern sensibilities, if you will, for better or for worse, depending on which way you fall on the political spectrum. But I came into this year, I hated the first episode.
The first two episodes are actually really bad.
I was like, holy shit, because tell me it gets better.
It's a soft intro to the series, and then you actually don't get episode one until you hit episode three.
Yeah, because actually I would almost compare this to Game of Thrones, and here's why. When me and Blair started Game of Thrones, we didn't much care for the first two or three episodes of the series. We're thinking, okay, it's medieval, some people die, Sean Bean, he's going to die eventually, whatever, who cares. But once we got past episodes 4 and 5, like, holy shit, this is really cool. Tyrion Lannister's a badass. And as I got watching Star Trek and I got to say, oh, fucking Michael Burnham, fuck off. But once I got to know her as a character, she got more and more interesting. And I think that's because, like I mentioned earlier, it's the serialized format. You can't really miss an episode of Discovery and know what the hell's going on. You could argue there's one or two episodes you could skip.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to skip any of them because there's a lot if you don't watch them, you're going to miss plot elements that are coming way later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's why I said I like the developments of the relationship with Burnham and Tyler where they're like, let's dance for 30 minutes.
Before we go into the what we thought was strong and weak points of the plot, let's get Alex's thoughts since we've been blowharding really hard into this.
You know what? I went into it, watched, and went, okay, I'll give it three episodes. And that's usually what I do for a show. But fully knowing I was probably going to watch it all regardless. And I would say it's a good Trek show. I still don't think it's good for the flagship of the series. If this was, let's say, a miniseries, and this was all it was going to be, like it was originally supposed to be just an anthology one season. If that's the case, that's great. Or if they change directions later, great. And I think if we didn't have the Orville out and it was just this, I would go, okay, this is what Trek is now. But when I see the Orville and go, okay, this is basically a funny, I'm saying in air quotes, because not every episode is funny. I feel that that show does Trek better than Trek does Trek.
Yeah, that's one thing I was having fun with.
If we didn't have it.
Yeah, the Orville, that's an entirely different discussion, which is kind of fun. As well, I've watched the entire series of that. I feel like it's a more funny, down-to-earth, almost in a sense, they added a serialized element to TNG.
It's almost, it has the feel of...
It feels like TNG.
It feels like TNG mixed with Stargate, in that there's an underlying plot that is going for each season. There is an arc that's happening, but you can watch the episodes sort of in any order you want. And you get your B and C plots that carry through.
Yeah. And that's what I enjoyed about the Orville. Plus it was just fun and it was just easier in some regards.
Also, I may be in the minority, but why do the special effects look better in that show that costs less than half the price of this other one?
Oh yeah, I agree. I've been wondering that the entire time.
And the argument was, oh, it's all the CG that they have to do. That show is entirely CG, yet why does it still look better?
Yeah.
So, and the other curious thing is, again, here, I'm not going to rag on the show because I did enjoy it, and I'm going to watch the next season. But it's something, it's telling to me what behind the scenes is going on when you have the Orville that almost every episode was either directed or written or both by people that have worked with Star Trek in the past, whether it be on the movies or on TNG or even actors on the shows. But not a single person was involved with Discovery that was on those previous shows.
Other than Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, other than Jonathan Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes actually directed one of both shows. And Robert Duncan McNeil, I think, did an episode of The Orville as well. But the funny thing is Frakes said, if you want the Hollywood budget and the, you know, that type of thing, then you go with Discovery. If you want TNG, you go with the Orville. And that was kind of a, you know, that was out of his own mouth, like how it came out.
The funny thing is, for how expensive the show is, it looks cheap. It really does. Like, it's the
it
space
looks,
parts.
It looks like a CBS show.
It's the angles, the camera work, the cinematography. Now, they may be spending a ton of money on the models and on the special effects, which do admittedly look a lot better than they did in the original preview they showed. The original preview made it look like a cheap web series.
It looked like a video game.
It looked worse. Yeah. It looked like a 90s video game, let's be real.
Yeah. It looked like in the 90s we would have gone, hey, that looks pretty good.
But the funny thing is that ship was actually... the Discovery and that preview shot was actually a rejected Star Trek Planet of the Titans Phase 2.
Well, it was rejected for a reason.
Rejected in the 70s, really. And they brought it back.
Because it would seem to me that, and I think the biggest issue I have is if you place this show after Nemesis in the Prime Universe, or even not in the Prime, but if it was placed after, it would basically alleviate almost all the problems people have with it.
Oh yeah, and that's what I've said.
This is the second time in a row that you've set a show in the past, and this time you're not even attempting to keep it in continuity.
See, and that's kind of why.
But then you openly say to the public that it is.
Well, and this is the thing. There's two elements of that, and since we're getting into the plot of it anyway, I always thought, and Dodd and I had talked about this on Future Imperfect years ago when this was announced, that we always thought that they should have either filled in between Star Trek Generations, where they had the Enterprise B to the Enterprise D, like somewhere in that time span, or gone post DS9 Voyager. And in essence, the Orville kind of does that. Like post DS9 Voyager, even though it's a totally different universe.
And that's the thing, it has the sleek, futuristic look that you figure would have been the logical progression from after Nemesis onward.
Which Star Trek Online, actually, funny enough, fills in all of the various plot holes that are in Star Trek and connects all the series together much better than Star Trek does itself. Like, it's hilarious, almost. But... I found the show, like, I wanted to hate it from the get-go, like, I'll be honest. And then, I watched it, it started growing on me, but it was different aspects and different characters than what they were originally intending. Like, I cared more for Saru than I did for Burnham, and I cared more for Stamets and Tilly than I did for, like, Tyler and, you know, people like that. So... again, it was kind of one of those moments, and I was seeing right through all the plot elements. Like, I saw things coming episodes before they happened, like the reveal, like the reveal that Lorca was from the mirror universe. I was guessing that from the beginning, and then I was guessing that when they jumped to the mirror universe, that was Lorca. That, you know, and then they showed the picture of the chair where he manually input his own coordinates. And, you know, that's
well,
why
there was, also the hint earlier on when he slept with the Admiral.
Yep.
He was behaving like he didn't even know her.
Yeah. He was behaving like he was ready to be assassinated in his sleep. So that's why he slept with the phaser. And so it was kind of funny that, you know, everything kind of played out the way it did. But just a lot of the plot elements I saw coming. And then it was funny because in the last episode it felt like they tried so hard to tie it up and make it feel like you know, original Star Trek. And so even if you looked in the crowd, you saw the original series blue uniforms from the cage. And they explained that the original series cage uniforms were actually a staple of Constitution-class starships to explain away the different uniforms in Starfleet.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, that's what they've explained. And then they have, because I was trying to figure that out too, the Enterprise, they kept very true to what the Enterprise should look like, other than the fact it doesn't look like the original series, but I mean color wise and graphically, but the build of it is the same as the original series with some very minimal modifications, and
it still looks cool. It's still the Enterprise.
It's still the Enterprise. They didn't Abrams it, so I was glad for that.
You know what would have actually solved everything in this? You could have kept it in the past if the big twist in the show had been that the entire show was set in the Mirror Universe and we were watching the rise of the Terran Empire.
And see, I think that would have been
a like, bit too much to swallow, or at least that could have been the overarching season.
Would it have been if, let's say, the last episode of the season had been the episode where they go to the Mirror Universe, I'm saying in quotes, and they go to the Mirror Universe and they see our Klingons, and they see like, or something like that, so that you were watching this and all the Trek fans that had been watching that were pissed off that, oh my God, look what they changed. They fucked everything up. They did this, da, da, da. And then they realize, holy shit, we've been watching the Mirror Universe the entire time, and now we've built up a connection to these characters. But instead, they went the cheap way.
Well, and the other thing I have a problem with this show, and this is the main issue. Like, I've managed to, like, even the Discovery returning to the Prime Universe at 9 months after they'd left originally, which explains why Starfleet was so decimated when it got to, like, the original series timeline, where there's, like, no ships around ever except for, like, Constitution-class ships. So it kind of explains that a little bit at the same point, and why, you know, everything's so kind of distant communication-wise. But the thing with the Klingons, like the whole design of them, doesn't work with this show. And I'll explain why, and it's because, and I'm not trying to hate on them changing aspects of things. It doesn't work because when you have a show that predates it, like Enterprise, that has the TNG DS9 looking Klingons that get the augment virus to look like the TOS version, and then you come into Discovery and you have these weird orc-looking Klingons, and then you go to TOS and have the smooth face, which they explained in Enterprise, and then you have in the motion picture and beyond them again looking in the same similar fashion, and then you look at these creatures from Discovery, they don't even fit the species. So I'm waiting to see what their explanation is.
They don't even
is.
Really fit, and it's almost like I have a feeling that they plan to have it part of like the Abrams verse, because it looks like an offshoot of that, only more extreme.
See, but and I'm kind of okay with them going into the Abrams verse if that's what they want to do.
They can't legally, because years ago Viacom split CBS and Paramount from each other, and so they're two different entities. And although that may change in the next year or so, they're looking at reacquiring each other so that they get all the rights back to programs such as Star Trek. So like the movie verse can have nothing to do with the television universe. Which is why we've never seen them go back to any of the old crews or any of that old stuff, because they don't have the rights to it. CBS does.
Because that would make sense that this, because they look about 90% the same. Just slight changes, but even then.
I just hate it. I honestly hate the design.
I think, here's the thing, if they just came flat out and said, this is what we did, and explained everything, people will be fine with it. It's the fact that they're lying to the fans.
They're doing the whole John Harriman thing from Into Darkness with everybody, and that's what's irritating everybody. It's not the fact that they aren't explaining it. You know, if they would have just come right out in Into Darkness saying, "Yeah, we've got Khan in the movie," people would have been like, "Oh, okay, whatever." You know, but they tried to.
You would have had some fans pissed. But I sat in the theater and I'm like, they're saying, oh, they said flat out, lied to you, we don't have Khan in this movie, period. I go see the movie and the theater was packed. And I remember the moment it's revealed and you could feel it coming on, half the theater went, oh my fucking God, out loud, yep. Audibly.
Same thing happened at like my screening too.
And then the whole
audibly angry with people. We had people leaving the theater trying to get refunds.
Well,
because they were lied to.
Yeah, and then the whole thing with the fact that they just copied verbatim but flipped it of Kirk and Spock's, you know, death.
Oh, I was so angry.
But you know, you've got one of the writing partners of that movie writing this show as the executive, one of the producers. So like, go figure.
And who is also. Was also in charge of, was it the last night, the Transformers?
No, he was involved with the first Merlin three. He was involved with the first three.
Okay, so not involved?
No.
Not involved with them being part of Merlin the Magician and all that crap?
No, but that's why that franchise is actually getting rebooted. They canceled everything after Bumblebee. They're starting from scratch on that. So probably because it bombed, they're going to do it with a G.I. Joe start for that universe.
Well... So here's the thing. This is starting to turn into a Highlander situation where you have the first movie is canon. Then the second movie is a sequel to the first movie. The third movie is a sequel only to the first movie, not the second movie. Then the third movie is the TV show is a sequel somewhat to the movie. But then the fifth movie is a sequel to the TV show and the movie, but not the other movies. And then the last movie is a sequel only to the show and ignores the continuity of the rest. Like, we're going to get into that sort of fragmented universe.
I really hope Adrian Paul shows up at some point on Discovery. I'm just saying.
Like, I'm waiting for, you know, for them to zoom out at the end of the last season and you realize that they're inside of a snow globe and it's all part of that autistic kid's dream that he had on, was it St. Elsewhere?
No, I think it would be funnier if they had it in the snow globe and then they zoomed out and Q is holding him in his hand and says, well, this makes for an interesting development, doesn't it? And then just ends it.
He just puts it on.
That'd be a great way to end the series. It was all Q.
or thinking, they always thought such small thoughts, and then just leave it at that.
You know what? I hope they bring John DeLancey on for a guest spot.
Oh, believe me, they're going to have, if they have somebody, it won't be him. They'll get somebody else.
You know what's funny? All the Star Trek cast that used to be on Star Trek wants to be on the Orville, but none of them have expressed interest in Discovery.
That makes me sad, because I really enjoy Discovery.
Even like, most of the Voyager cast wants to be on the Orville. Even Robert Picardo's been on the Orville.
Yeah. I mean, and they're getting actual movie stars to show up.
Yeah, they got Charlize Theron in there. They got
Liam Neeson.
Yep, Liam Neeson. And just because they're friends with Seth MacFarlane, and they're like, yeah, we'll do it. You know, just because, like, he's like, hey, I got this awesome part. You'll be in this whole episode. Like,
I mean,
he was smart. Like, they toned down the hokiness of the jokes from the first couple episodes.
Well, the jokes that they have, really, they aren't... They aren't trying to be Family Guy like they were in the first two episodes. They're intelligent.
Well, I mean,
they're genuinely funny.
Like, Michael's not there yet, but I think that's the next thing you should really watch. But like, just one segment, them all sitting in the mess hall eating, and then they find out that Bordas can eat anything, and so they're organically they move from, can you eat this napkin? Can you eat this? And then the one guy just goes, I'm going to go grab a bag of nails. I'll be right back. And then it cuts to the next scene. So it's that sort of, like, it's the way they talk becomes more organic, like the way you figure people would actually talk on a ship.
See, that's what I
love about it.
See, one of the things I like about Seth MacFarlane is, say what you will about him, but the guy's a brilliant writer. He really is. He really nails dialogue. It may be random and fucked up on Family Guy or American Dad or whatever, but on the Orville, on the two or three episodes I've seen, it feels like...
And he touches
Alex
on...
Alex put it to me like this. He said to me, Mike, this is how people would actually talk.
And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, it seems so natural, whereas Burnham and Tilly would have these deep philosophical discussions, which might occasionally really happen, but more often than not. So do you want to go to the bar after this shift? Yes. Yes, I do. Stuff like that. It seems so natural. Or like Alex just said, hey, go grab this bag of nails.
Or sort of thing. They even touch on philosophical stuff in the Orville too. Like later on there, they have deep thoughts with, you know, between other people. It's just that every conversation comes up naturally in that show. And that's what I love about how it's written compared to Discovery is, yeah, they try to add the inflections of, you know, some of the language changes, some of the, you know, the dance party and the Harry Mudd episode, which I didn't much care for that part of it, but I understand why they did it, just to add something fun to further the fun of the episode. They even had like serious issues, like, you know, choosing the gender of your child, you know, the social media, you know, upvote, downvote, you know, thing that one was really funny. They even had Lauren Lester, the voice actor of Robin from Batman the Animated Series in it. But there's so much that is different between the two series that is worth a watch on both accounts. And they both exist in this, you know, same space, just albeit differently. I love each one for different reasons. I like Discovery overall as a whole, but it's got a lot of issues for me, mostly because of non-explanation. Whereas the Orville is Star Trek without the name. And for that, I feel like I enjoy that show and there's more rewatchability for me there than there is with Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Discovery is a show you don't go back and rewatch a lot. It's kind of like Game of Thrones. It's something you can watch maybe a couple of times. I think Discovery is best when binged in short bursts. Having to wait between episodes, like you did week to week. Yeah, that kind of sucks. The fact that I could binge it all in a couple of days.
It's a melodrama soap opera. If you noticed, it was always intense, always 100%, never letting up. And that started with Battlestar Galactica. So it borrows the serialized storytelling from like a Babylon 5, but doesn't have the 22 episode arcs per season to do it. They only had 15 episodes. So they're cramming a lot in. And the other thing is, for it being on a premium, you know, streaming service, most of the episodes were under 45 minutes long,
which is crap.
And seemed kind of short. I know the reasoning for it is it's actually our fault, Canada, because we're the only country in the world that's airing it live on basic cable.
Really?
So it was co-produced by Space, which is like our sci-fi channel. So it would air Sunday nights at 8:00. Live here at the same time it's airing on the streaming service when it goes live, and it has to air in within a length that it'll fit within commercial breaks. So and then Netflix gets it, I think, a day or two later worldwide.
Yeah, and see,
so it's actually our cable fault. So we're the only country that gets it.
That sucks.
On terrestrial TV.
But yeah, we have to sign up for CBS All Access here in the US, which I refuse to do because one, I did the free trial on the first, when they had the first two episodes out. I watched the first two episodes on it and their service was garbage. Plus there was nothing I wanted to watch on the service. Like I already had Netflix and Hulu at the time, which I've since canceled the Netflix, but I still have access to Hulu, and honestly, like I didn't want to sign up for CBS All Access just to see Star Trek. Like, so there's alternative methods, and as bad as I hate saying that, it wasn't like I much preferred that over paying CBS $5 for a subscription for one show, or $10 for their ad-free subscription for one show.
not to mention that the streaming version in the States, like on CBS All Access, is in stereo. And it, from what I've seen, it's a pretty low quality audio stream.
Oh, yeah.
Even the video stream's not that great.
Nope.
Whereas the rest of the world, if you're getting the Netflix stream, you're getting it up to 4K and in full surround if you have a surround setup.
Well, and so, the fact
so
that the torrent
basically if you're
came
in,
out.
You're in Europe. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The torrents are out within an hour of it being out. People are just getting like full ripped right from European Netflix.
And the thing is you can get them in you know, full HD, 720 or 480, and download them any way you want. And they look and sound great no matter what size you're getting. And, like, not saying I did that for all of them, but I did them for a few.
No, and you're not. And for us, like up here, if you're watching it on, you know, basic cable, you're stuck with having like an ad pop up a quarter or even half of the screen sometimes in the middle of an action scene. They'll pop up, you know, next time on Big Bang Theory or one of these stupid things.
Yeah, and so, see, the all-access thing, like, it kept crashing, like, every time you'd go to a commercial-type break, like, that, or that spot in the episode, like, it would crap out for me. And so, like, I just was like, this is crap.
The streaming rights are on Crave, which is, Crave is like, it's like our version of Hulu, only it's sponsored by a couple of the cable companies. So, but again, still, it's notorious for having low quality audio. And like, this is a show that if you have a good surround getup or really good headphones, you want to watch it in the highest quality you can.
Yeah. And like I said, overall, it's enjoyable. I didn't much care for them trying to amp it up and, you know, modify everything, but I get it. It's made in today's era, so they're going to do what they're going to do. But
I also don't like the actor that they got to play Spock's dad. Never liked him pretty much in anything he's done.
Nope, I didn't like him either in Gotham. Like, that was my first exposure to him that I can remember, and I didn't like him in that, and I don't like him now, and I don't. He doesn't even really look the part, which is even worse. Like, I'm waiting to see what they do in season two, whether they cast a Captain Pike. They won't show Spock. They've already said they don't want to show Spock. Well,
also, Spock's mom looks to be younger than Spock.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is she's like, you know, we're supposed to be 10 years before Kirk, and she's got like a full head of gray hair by the time she shows up on the Enterprise for Babel.
She looks to be like 35 here.
And she looks like 55 in Babel. Or 60.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, it's just, it's humorous, to say the least. I'm wondering if they're going to cast Captain Pike, because they have that end of the episode, like, oh, we're in distress, and yet it comes, like, right up to the Discovery, like, oh, yeah, there's, you know, no one around, but we're in distress.
Or they're going to swerve us, and it'll be the biggest swerve ever, and it's like, the next season, Discovery is just, like, it's not even called that, and now we're following the Enterprise.
Well, they said next season the Enterprise is going to be pretty much throughout most of the season with the Discovery, but it's not going to be the center focus. But it's going to be pretty prominent throughout the second season.
How is
that
possible? It can be amongst it the entire time, but not be the focus.
Yeah, I know. That was their saying, though.
I don't believe anything they say anymore.
Yeah, that's just the bait fans, honestly.
I know. But I think, too, that they put that in there specifically to bring people back for season two. Because now you're like, oh, the Enterprise is here. What are they going to do? But if they cast Pike, a couple of the interesting casting choices that I saw pop up on Twitter were somebody referenced that Tom Welling looks like he could be Jeffrey Hunter, Christopher Pike, or Tyler Hoechlin, the other Superman from Supergirl, kind of has that look too. And I think he almost looks like he could play it better. But I think that would be an interesting way to have Pike, you know, and still kind of look very true to the original by having one of those actors. And they're both playing Superman to some degree. so it's kind of funny. But they both look that persona. So it'd be kind of cool if they did that, if they do have Pike, and then they could have Number One and you know, various versions of those actors from back then. But I kind of look forward to what they're doing and what they're going to do, but, you know, at the same time, I felt that the series could have been better.
When is season two supposed to premiere?
They're saying in the fall.
Wow.
But.
So they're probably already filming.
But. Yeah, they started filming last week.
They have, like, apparently it's like three, it's 1 to 2 months lead time for each episode for the special effects.
So,
now, so they're going to do the same. It's going to be the same bullshit. They're going to air half the season and then take like a 3 month break and then come back to it.
Yep, that's what they're going to do. That's the plan. But originally they were supposed to wait until next year to actually air the second season originally, and then they changed it to fall.
Like they're not getting that. Like putting this extra money into all the CG. If they had spent money and made models and stuff, they could speed up the production process. And considering that they don't even show a ton of space scenes, I don't know what's costing so much, unless they're literally just in a room that's completely green screen.
They actually have all the sets, like the sets built. Everything on the view screen is green screen too.
Like, what is costing the $10 million or whatever it costs per episode? Like, I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it either. I just see a lot of like flashy, like Hollywood style camera special effect angles instead of just doing the standard.
Well, you're
setup.
Probably paying. Well, you're it's probably paying actors. For the crew and actors. You may not see it on the screen, but you're probably seeing it behind
nobody,
the scenes.
Other than Michelle Yeoh and is it Jason Isaacs? Nobody in this is famous.
No.
I'd wager the girl that plays Burnham was pretty famous. She was on Walking Dead for a few years.
I could wager that as well. But
she's not
a household
getting $1 million an episode famous. She's probably getting like $20,000 or $30,000 per episode. Like she's not. This is also on streaming, so they have different contracts. Like the Actors Guild gives them less than what they get if it was on normal TV. So they it's not that. There's something. It's a case of we're doing a whole bunch of CGI because we can and because we have the budget to do it. Whereas if they had, like, they're not even doing a lot of space-based things, so it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't make sense that Enterprise looked better.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, like I have the Blu-rays and Enterprise looked better, and I thought it looked like crap when it first aired.
Yeah, I'm a little torn myself. Like I don't know. It's not been a fun process for the fans, I'll say that.
I don't know. I honestly think this is going to bring in more fans. I really do.
No, I'm not debating that. Every time there's a revival of a show, I mean, look at Beast Wars. Look how polarizingly different that was for Transformers. And yet it revitalized and rebirthed the franchise into what we see today. And in some regards, the animation went back to its roots after that. And in the live action, it just looked like, you know, a junkyard battle. And so, I mean, you're probably going to get, you know, a series after Discovery that kind of goes back to the roots of what Star Trek looks like. But for right now, this is what they need to do in order to hype it up to get it back in the mainstream. And so, I mean, I kind of get it. But at the same time,
if they wanted it in the mainstream, it would be on CBS.
Or, yeah, on regular cable. Or if they didn't want it there, they should have put it on the CW.
If they wanted mainstream, it would be on broadcast TV.
They want to test the waters over the air.
What's funny is the show's and CGI looks worse than Legends of Tomorrow.
Which is the worst of those shows.
Yes. So
and Legends of Tomorrow cost easily a quarter of what the show cost to make.
Oh yeah, easy.
So the thing is, they had the production done a lot of it up here. It looks like post production was done in, I think, Montreal.
Yeah, most of the modern shows are made in Montreal or Vancouver.
Because I know that there's a big tax incentive; they get a whole bunch of their money back if they do that.
Well, I know they just built a ton of new warehouses for Discovery in like Vancouver or Montreal, somewhere up there.
Well, I thought they were filming this in Toronto. Because we have friends who work on the show.
It's the live action parts, the post production though.
Ah,
it'll be done. and it'll be done in whatever province gives them the best tax credits. Now, if they're doing it in BC, you can't tell me that people, like the studio that did Stargate, couldn't work on it, because that's the thing. Stargate Universe, that is now, what, 8 years old now, looks better than this. And that was all done in Vancouver. So, and that was done for, you know, a lot less money, too. Like it, they
see,
were
I don't
at,
think
like,
this looks as bad as you guys are saying, though, personally.
Well, see,
it
like,
looks like a green screen. I can see, you can see the outline on them. They didn't even erase half of the aliasing effect. It looks jarring.
I've never noticed.
I saw it too. I've been looking at things to nitpick, in this series, but at the same time, I've been trying not to. I've been trying to like it, for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm still on the fence about it. I like the series as a whole, but there's a lot of weak writing elements that I'm more so having issues with, and a lot of non answers. Specifically,
I hope
the Klingons, and then the magical. Oh, here's a bomb in the center of your planet. Here, you do the right thing and call back the fleet. Like, that was just dumb.
Well, I think I'll sum up my fear is. And I think a lot of people have a similar one, is people are pissed that it's not up to snuff because they're afraid it's going to get canceled and then we're going to have like another drought of 10 years of a new show. They're going to go, nobody watched it, so nobody wants new Trek, but they're not going to realize that it's just not the Trek people want. And it's right now, it got all those crazy reviews, it's raving, it's great, because it's part of a trend. It's like, if it's new and edgy and different, it just automatically gets praised. They're not really looking deep into it. Whereas the Orville, all the reviews basically said it was a piece of dog shit.
Well, yet, what's funny is all the reviewers...
The viewers watched it. Yeah, people are watching it. So there's something it's some sort of bias with the critics, where I wouldn't put it past them getting paid off to say things and not even... properly review it, because there's no way you could tell me that the Orville is a piece of garbage and this is the best show ever, because that's basically what everybody was saying.
Yeah, well, the funny thing, like I said, the whole thing with between the two shows is, if you looked at the Rotten Tomatoes score, which I'm not a fan of the Rotten Tomatoes thing, but they took the Orville and Discovery and put them side by side. The critics were just bending over backwards, like, oh, Discovery is the awesomest and the Orville sucks, like, and then you look at the fan vote and it was complete opposite number. And what's funny is a lot of media retailers have come and flipped on their, you know, by the end of the series, were like, you know, this show sucks, like, as a whole. And or at least had the saying that, you know, the majority of it had a lot of issues. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. Like, everybody was raving to begin with. And if you look, too, most of the positive reviewers for Discovery are the major Star Trek podcasts and reviewers that got a special invite by CBS.
So they got buttered up and then they had to give it a good review?
Pretty much. So... I'm wondering. Yeah, I'm wondering what's going down. So,
because the big thing for me was, especially since the reviews were based on the pilots of both shows, and the pilot of the Orville was miles better than the pilot. Like, the first two episodes of Discovery were almost made me want to turn it off.
Yeah, they're very, very off-putting. It sets up the universe, but you don't care.
Pretty much.
Yet, when the series really hits its stride around episode... I think around episode 6 is where Discovery gets good. And that's a lot of time to invest in something that's kind of boring.
I would agree. Especially since, at that point, you're beyond your one-month free trial of CBS All Access. So, they're expecting you to make it through the four or five crappy episodes, then expect you to pay to watch the good episodes.
Not a good business model.
No.
No. Definitely not.
It sounds like, here's the thing, we're not trying to rain on it. It's we notice these bad things because we care.
Yep, that's pretty much why. I just wish we had more answers, and I wish that some of the people were more, I don't know, more front-facing with what they are doing with the series, I guess. Like, not trying to play coy with the fans, because we've kind of figured out all the plot lines throughout the whole season way earlier than they should have been noticed, because they were trying to be too clever about it. Like, I knew the minute Volk disappeared that he was Tyler.
I had no clue. I actually had to read ahead and figure that out.
Because Tyler showed up and he's like, oh, you know, I just, you know, and the way that Klingon lady was Laurel was,
yeah,
was fawning over him when him and Lorca escaped, I knew he was Volk, because Volk was never seen again.
And I think what I hate is the costumes and makeup they wear make it so difficult to listen to their voices.
And it's, yeah, it's
Klingon.
Yeah. Well, it's because they wanted aliens.
Well, I do. Okay, one thing I do like is them speaking in their language and having subtitles.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
A little more.
Yeah. Which was a cool thing, but in the copies that Alex gave me, the subtitles weren't always there for the Klingon, so I had to guess.
You would have had to right click and turn them on.
You bet I did, and they weren't there.
Oh, geez.
So I was like, I'm going to guess there's a lot of Klingon bad stuff happening right now. It only happened in a couple of episodes, but.
Don't worry, because it would have just infuriated you. Because apparently these Klingons are dishonorable, have no honor, don't follow anything of what they should be following.
These Klingons fight more like Krogan from Mass Effect.
They do.
Well,
than anything else.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, that's why I kept thinking it was the mirror universe, because I'm like, it's got to be something different. Like, why do these Klingons have no honor? Why does the Federation fight like there is no Federation? I don't think we even saw any Romulans, did we?
Nope. We saw Orions, Tellrites, Andorians. They mentioned Nausicaans.
They made a big deal about having, like, nothing. They had like no aliens on their crew that were for aliens we had ever seen before, and then they spent no time discussing any of their races except for Mander.
The Kelpians. Well, they talked about them a fair bit, the Kelpians, but they even make a point of mentioning there's not many of them left, which is probably why we don't see any post. I guess they got wiped out or something.
Like even the bridge crew, like, you know nothing about most of them.
I want to know. There was.
I think they're going to flesh them out next season, though, because there's somehow an android. There's somehow
one that looks like one of Daft Punk.
Yeah. Like,
I want to know more about that one specifically, because that one looked really cool. I was really happy with that one.
And then you have the girl with the bionic implant in her head.
Yeah. Yep. Who was on the
Detmer, I think her name was.
Yeah, Detmer. And then you've got the African American navigator.
I don't know why, but I found her intensely attractive.
Which one?
Detmer.
Yeah, she's hot. But
again, like, Billy's bad. She had maybe five lines in the entire show.
Until she was in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
And then she had a little bit more. But that's not really her, so. Just like Tilly. She didn't get, you know.
Captain Killy.
I think it was funny, though. I think it's funny.
I hope they do more Mirror Universe stuff.
Well, I think they're done with Mirror Universe, but I think it's funny that they had the ISS Discovery come back to their time and get destroyed almost promptly after coming back. Or, like, coming into the Prime Universe, and yet the USS Discovery managed to make it all the way back home.
Yeah. I bet there'll be some plot thread from that picked up. There's no way the Discovery from their universe got trashed without something surviving.
Well, they said that Admiral Cornwell had watched the Discovery be destroyed.
That's true, but I got a feeling there's some clever writer will figure something out. Like an escape pod at the last minute or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Like some sort of transporter thing.
See, that's the thing. I just want more Mirror Universe because I think it's cool. I want to see Captain Killy. I really do.
I think that ship sailed. I think you get to see it with Tilly actually pretending.
I'm hoping. That's what I want for season two. Although one thing I don't want the season to do is I hope on Discovery we never see a version of the Borg.
Yeah, I hope we never see that either.
Just because Enterprise skirted such a line with it, and if Discovery does it, I'm okay if they go to the Delta Quadrant. I'm okay with that.
I think they're done with the Spore Drive. I think that they explained that away in the last episode, saying that until Starfleet can figure out another way, and I think this is what starts them on the journey to creating the Transwarp Drive that the Excelsior has. Because they're already constructing the starbase that the Excelsior and the Enterprise are like in later on in like Wrath of Khan, outside of Earth. They're already constructing it. So I think that the Spore Drive is done. I think they've kind of outlawed it because it's a genetic modification thing. And so they're like, no, we're going to go the other route. And so that aligns it with canon, just like the destruction of half of Starfleet and then, you know, various other things that they're trying to make fit into canon at this point because they pigeonholed themselves into this spot.
Yeah.
So
should we make season two predictions that maybe call it a night, my friends?
Sounds good.
So what I want from season two is I want to see what's going to happen with Stamets deal with the loss of Hugh. Will he find another person on the ship? Because the grieving process after losing a partner is obviously very, very, very devastating. Will we see Tyler come back at some point? Personally, I'm hoping to see an Andorian join the crew. I want to see more alien stuff like that. Like I said, a Tellrite maybe, because they're an alien that always gets talked about but very rarely seen. One thing I'd like to see is the Tholians. Give me a Tholian episode. I think that'd be really, really fucking cool because they've always been talked about but never seen other than like a beam of light or something, I think it was, Steve. Like in the original series, you saw them but you never really saw them or something. Yep. I don't know. Bring in the Romulans. Stuff like that.
Well, they said that the Romulans, they hadn't officially been seen because there was a war between the time of Archer, I believe, and the time of Discovery, and so like the Romulans haven't been seen face to face ever. They've only been seen in combat.
Yeah, so I'm hoping we'll get a chance to see that.
But I don't think so because in Balance of Terror,
that'll break continuity.
That'll break continuity with Balance of Terror.
They've already done it anyway. So, and like I said,
this is one of the major ones. They would
pretty much.
If they did that, people would just stop watching completely, and it would kill the show. So,
I don't know.
I agree that they might do that. I think what they're going to do, my prediction, is it's going to be time travel. That'll be the main, something is fucking up their timeline or to that extent. Because they're saying that next season's probably going to have more away missions. But I think it's going to be some sort of time travel paradox thing they're having to deal with.
That'd be cool. I would be up for that.
I'm thinking next season, I think the Enterprise is going to be featured pretty heavily. I think we'll see Pike in number one. I think we'll possibly see the whole thing and the reason why the Enterprise goes through its next refit and see Pike become Commodore and get his battle scars that become Menagerie, maybe, if they end up going that far with it. I think also we'll end up seeing Prime Lorca show up at some point.
Yep. Because Jason Isaacs is a fucking badass.
Well, I'm wondering who they're going to make the captain of the Discovery, although I think Saru should have gotten it. Because they were going to Vulcan to pick up the next captain. So the only logical explanation, too, is that I thought would be kind of fun is having Captain Robert April, the original first captain of the Enterprise when it was launched.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be interesting to cast him and have him take on the Discovery.
Are they going to go with Spock?
They won't, because Spock's like a lieutenant commander on the Enterprise right now.
But again, it seems like anything's open in the air.
It seems like that, but I think, like, just spitballing who I think could end up captain and whatnot. I think we'll see, in addition, a new doctor hit the Discovery. Wouldn't it be interesting if it was, like, if they tried to recast McCoy? As bad as I hate saying that.
That would work. That would work because he was always older than the rest of the crew. So
yeah, so I could see that. It would be interesting to say the least there. But yeah, I'm not really sure where they're gonna go with it. I would like to see more away missions. I would like to see like maybe Q show up, just enough to haggle them, or maybe to royally screw them. I don't know. It would just be fun. Or a Trelane knockoff, which is basically a Q continuum in TOS. I don't know. There's a lot of methods. I could see them doing time travel, but I hope they don't. It's even though that's like a trope that's been done in like every series, especially heavily in the original series and Voyager. Like, it was heavy.
Oh, I just remember. They're probably going to get more people. I predict they're going to get anybody they can that was a guest star on the original series to come back if they're still alive, because they did that with Clint Howard. He's the only person that returned from the original series.
Which I thought was funny. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was for anybody that doesn't remember, he was the alien when they were...
Baylock.
Really powerful ship. And then when they went and finally met the alien, it was a baby.
Baylock.
Or like a toddler. Yeah,
he was like 7 years old, and they voiceover dubbed him in that episode, which was funny. I do know that Shatner's invested heavily in VR and 3D technology, and partnered with a couple companies, and I know that they've done like full scans of him to de-age him and have him at his current age to insert him into VR and action. And so like it would be interesting if they had him de-aged as like Lieutenant Kirk or Lieutenant Commander Kirk.
No, you know what you really want to fuck with the fans? You pull him out of, what was that, the Nexus or whatever it was called?
Yeah.
See, that'd be a fantastic series finale.
He gets pulled out of, like, he just shows up. Like, what? He's pulled out of it.
Well, I have a theory on that, too. But what would be really funny is...
Isn't he not dead? Because at any given point in time, he's still in the Nexus and not in the Nexus.
Yep. And so that means technically Picard, Guinan, because Guinan's in the Nexus. So technically Sorin's in there as well. So, like, I don't know. There was maneuverability in that, I think. But they even revisited the Nexus in Star Trek Online, and Geordi's captain of the Challenger and has to...
you know what they could do? I just had a thought for a guest spot. Guinan would be kind of an interesting character to bring back.
Except she would look super old in the
could
past.
Could be Guinan's mother.
Or de-ager.
Or de-ager or something. But yeah, just think about that, because the El-Orians is a race we know nothing about.
Or something that could be interesting, a plot point that they thought about doing on Enterprise, the Mirror Universe Kirk. Because remember the Tantalus device?
Mm-hmm.
Which could just make people just randomly disappear? Well, it was thought to be able to transport people in through space and time. So what if they transported Mirror Kirk to the Prime Universe, and it's his older, you know, like, because he went back in time before things, and then is still running machinations? It would be kind of interesting, because they talked about doing that in Enterprise, too.
Only if he gets to have that little dog monster.
Sure.
That dog they put a horn on.
the white dog thing from Repente.
Yeah. They're like, what beast is this? I'm like, that's just Spot with a horn.
That's Butler. That would be humorous anyways. So I think that about rounds this episode. Yeah, Data.
Oh god, they're going to put like lore in there or something.
They could have the Soongs show up, although Spiner wants nothing to do with it, so.
Really? He's gone on record and said that?
Well, he's more or less said.
Or he's hinted at.
He's hinted at.
That makes me sad.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you could get Worf, but then what would be the point? Because you'd have to cover him in makeup and make him look too weird.
Yeah, so what's the point in having that Klingon? Unless the other origin, the other thought I had was maybe Laurel ends up contacting, because maybe these are the mutated Klingons, the ones that didn't get the cure in Enterprise. Because remember, they had to have a cure. I know it was supposed to kill them, but maybe they figured out another alternative way, and some of them had created another method of surviving, and that ended up with this weird amalgamation of this Klingon orc-looking thing. And maybe the real Klingons are hiding out in a deep sector of space, waiting to take their rightful place in Kronos. So that could easily explain both divisions of looking Klingons.
Or, I'm wondering, you know, it'd be kind of cool if they brought in, what was the, I don't even think they gave a name to the alien race that were in Conspiracy.
Oh, those things with those, yeah, those creatures that were in the back of their necks.
Yeah.
Although they were frying one up on Kronos.
Oh, yeah. And the guy, did you see when the Klingon was peeing and you could see two streams? So they confirmed that the Klingons have two penises. So, like, it's funny that they'll put little things like that in there to make that canon, but then miss so many big things.
It's a more of because they can.
Yeah.
So I think we'll call this episode and see what the listeners think about it. So you can get a hold of us by emailing feedback@alteredgeek.com. If you want to join our Starfleet chapter, let us know by also emailing there, and we'll get you connected in the right way so you can join our Starfleet chapter that we are currently in the process of forming. You can get a hold of me on Twitter @SCP21 and yourself, sirs.
You can find me at Birdman.dot across Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can check out, obviously, ThisWeekInGeek.net and TerribleWarriors.com.
Same deal as him.
Except not Birdman.dot.
No.
You could.
He's like, it's just easier. Just say that, and then he'll forward it to me.
It's what happens anyway.
So anyways, until next time, you want to close it out, Birdman?
Of course. Until next time, listeners, live long and prosper.